welcome to Ask an Atheist. Today it's me, Becky Friedman, and in the studio with me is Meredith. How are ya?
I'm doing good, Becky.
And not seen in a long time, not heard in a long time, Robert. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thanks for bringing me back up here.
Robert Ray, it's so nice to have you on the show. We haven't heard from you maybe in about a year, but you've been hard at work on your own podcast, Secular Yakking.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
So where can our listeners find Secular Yakking?
Well, I made it easy on purpose, and it's secularyakking.com, and that's yakking with two Ks.
Okay, so you do that podcast from your place up north with your partner in crime and partner in life,
yep,
Amy?
Amy, yep, my wonderful wife.
Awesome, awesome. So we're happy to have you on Ask an Atheist today. We've got some interesting things going on. We have typically been working on our best words segment where
they're the best.
We just couldn't avoid talking about politics on an atheist show. Today I think we're going to take a little break. You might say from the best words, we're in the calm before the storm, whatever that means. but we do have some interesting things, and let's start with something related to school. I seem to always gravitate towards these school-related ones and these student rights ones and these teachers.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it might have nothing to do with the fact that I actually am a school teacher, but we are going to look at stuff related to atheism and skepticism and separation of church and state and humanism and all sorts of stuff like that. So this comes to us from Denver, or from Colorado. A graduate of Delta High School in Colorado is suing her school district for punitive and compensatory damages after they allegedly academically and socially penalized her for atheist views. Sydney Fisk claims that administrators, school board members, and teachers sabotaged her college recommendations, graded her unfairly, and pressured her to cease using her constitutionally protected right to free expression about religious and political issues. During her exemplary high school tenure, Fisk pushed back against her school in many ways. She protested the appropriateness and legality of a mandatory faith-based sex ed assembly, questioned a religious guest speaker, and was quoted by the local paper making comments critical of a middle school Bible distribution event. Fisk's principal and history teacher, who gave her an F in government class, allegedly told her that the failing grade would go up if she'd, quote, shut up and quit making media comments. Oh, Sydney.
Yeah, I find that comment rather disgusting, especially from a government teacher.
That government teacher that should be encouraging, what, students to be fully participatory?
Right.
Yeah. There's something really ironic about a government class teacher telling their student to shut up and not, you know, participate in democracy.
Yeah, that seems weird.
So, Robert, you've got two girls right now who are their senior year in high school. You just have one that has graduated.
Right.
So congrats on
that.
That parenting feat is nearly done in that stage of your parenting feat. You got one down, two to go.
Yep.
How would you feel if either of your girls were penalized academically for making their voices known outside of school in an atheistic context?
So I would be really, really pissed off about this. We did run into a situation with one of our girls where we had an incident with dress code and spaghetti straps and stuff like that. And they got a very coarsely worded letter from me.
Mm-hmm.
But to affect their academic career and possibly their future careers because they spoke up against what the school was doing, that deserves a lot more than a letter. That deserves I consider a lawsuit a proper action for this.
Okay, so we're on board here with Sydney Fisk.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And you know, you have, you know, children that actually have been vocal or participatory in humanistic and atheist context and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a government teacher telling them stop that or I'll give you an F?
Yeah, that is just the tip of insanity there. I mean, I can't imagine a teacher actually doing that in this day and age. I mean, this is not, you know, 1887, right?
Well, it was in Arkansas or Florida.
Well,
it's Colorado.
It's Colorado, but you know,
Colorado has its own demographics, much like Washington, right? So there's sections of Colorado that are very left-leaning, and sections of Colorado they're very right-leaning, right? It just depends on where you are.
Yeah.
Now, I know that students in a school context actually do have abridged First Amendment rights. They can't say anything and everything that they would ever want. Every child is allowed to bring their own Bible to school, but a teacher can tell them, hey, stop preaching from the Bible in the middle of direct instruction in music class. You know, like, that's okay because the kid's disrupting the educational environment. There's things like we can tell you to wear certain things or not wear certain things, and schools can tell you to not have messages on your t-shirts that are degrading or harassing to groups of people, but we can't tell you not to wear your political candidate's t-shirt. We can't tell you stop writing letters to the editor outside of school. We can't tell you, hey, that thing that you said as captain of debate team in a particular debate is unbecoming of a government, student. We can't tell you that student leadership is not a position for a girl who speaks up against religious sex ed. And these are all things that allegedly happened to Sydney Fisk. And so I'm wondering how you have teachers that, you know, aren't as schooled in what those rights are as the students they are supposed to be teaching. Robert, you said you mentioned that you had actually heard Ms. Fisk speak.
Yeah, last year at California Freethought Day.
Okay.
I thought she was an excellent speaker, especially for someone, what was she, 18 at the time? Just amazing. I think she spoke better than I do. So kudos to her for that.
But even if this wasn't a brilliant 4.1 or 4.3 student, right? She's got those advanced classes that make her GPA unfathomably high. Even if it wasn't a kid that was particularly articulate, even if it wasn't a young lady who was captain of her debate team, would we still want to see that students can express their rights, express their views, and call out their school systems for doing things that seem to be in conflict with the Constitution?
Absolutely.
Is that a question?
Yeah.
I really hope that in our area, in Washington State, and across the nation, that when we have students, this doesn't have a chilling effect on a student wanting to express themselves, even if they were wrong, even if they thought, hey, you know what? I think that my school is doing something that's unconstitutional. I wrote a letter to the editor. I made a comment in the media. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not quite right. But I would still hope that we as teachers and as administrators would have the integrity to honor that student's participation in a greater society and say, well, here's where you're wrong. And here's where that, you know, serves whatever, but not penalize the child academically. That just seems bonkers to me. And I would really hope that we have the integrity to be able to, use this as so-called teachable moments. So I think, Sydney, we're really rooting for you here, at least in this studio.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think that there's some folks that would really like to see those teachers and administrators, you know, that maybe contemporaries or colleagues of that particular teacher and administrator that would vehemently disagree with them. So good luck to you, Ms. Fisk. Let's go from one lawsuit in one area to, Meredith, you did mention Florida. So let's head all the way to Brevard County in Florida, where a federal judge has ruled that not allowing atheists to give invocations is unconstitutional. The case against the county was filed in 2015 when members of several Floridian freethought and humanist organizations, including Central Florida Freethought Community, were denied the opportunity to give an invocation prior to the county commission meetings. The judge's ruling concludes that the county's current policies surrounding invocations violate multiple articles of both the U.S. and Florida constitutions, as it limits a citizen's right to participate in ceremonial pre-governmental meetings based on religious beliefs. Meanwhile, Brevard County Attorney Scott Knox is already planning to appeal the decision, calling the judge, quote, dead wrong in his reasoning. Well, guys, help me understand this.
So I don't think the judge is dead wrong because he agrees with what the Supreme Court said in the Greaser versus Galloway decision.
Catch me up on that, because so, I think we haven't talked about that in maybe a year or so.
Yeah, Greaser versus Galloway basically said that municipalities cannot discriminate based upon religious preference when it comes to invocations and prayers before meetings. So even non-religious people get to give invocations.
So non-religious people can give a religious invocation. That seems a little bit strange.
Well, not all invocations are religious.
So you actually have experience with this.
I do.
We've talked about it on the show in the past, but give us like a brief summary of like what do you do? What's it like when you give a non-theistic invocation?
So my non-theistic invocations focus more on unity and having better government, working together, finding ways where even a diverse population can get things accomplished. That's more what my invocations are about.
And on what authority do you, Robert Ray, right? Dude from, you know, this part of Washington, like you don't have rabbi in front of your name. You don't have friar. You don't have sister. You don't have, you know,
pastor
in front of your name. What would give you the authority to give these kinds of invocations?
Well, because I am a citizen. Right?
So any citizen.
Any citizen should be able to give these invocations, in my opinion. You don't have to have humanist celebrant, right? You don't have to have preacher or pastor. I think any citizen should be able to get up and say, I want to inspire my government to do better. And these are the words I wanted you to use before you start making decisions. So that's kind of what I see an invocation to be.
Okay. You, though, happen to be humanist celebrant.
I am.
And what are the kinds of circumstances that you've actually done this in Washington?
So I've done a total of four in Washington. I did Oak Harbor, Marysville, and then Clark County. And I was also the first humanist to give an invocation at the State House down in Olympia.
Cool, cool. So did you have anyone that like said you were dead wrong and being able to get some pushback?
Not exactly. So Oak Harbor was pretty easy. I just had to get a citizen to endorse me, basically. Originally, the city said, you're not a citizen, so we're not going to let you do it. So then I went to Tom.
Well, why'd you even go to Oak Harbor to begin with?
Because they have prayers already.
Okay, so only go to places...
Right, I will only go to places that already have prayers in place. Otherwise, what's the point? I don't need... They're not doing invocations. Why would I ask to do an invocation at some place that's not doing them?
So don't try and introduce things where it's not... Leave good enough alone.
Exactly.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Equal representation.
Exactly. But the state was where I got a little bit iffy, because I wrote my representative to endorse me and say, hey, yeah, you can come down. Just got completely ignored.
Hmm.
So I ended up writing a letter to the neighboring district in Lake Stevens, and she said, fine, come down.
Okay, so that's good.
That was a plus, yeah.
Okay.
Then when I got there, she wanted to make sure that my invocation was not going to be offensive or anything like that.
Well, so. Well, you seem like a horribly offensive individual, Robert. I mean,
obviously.
I'm just sitting
very
here
offended,
aghast, and I'm just, you know, befuddled at your presence here.
What
and
on
your
earth
ability.
Could be offensive?
Yeah. So did you get the sense that she would have said this to a pastor?
I don't think so.
A rabbi in front of his name?
No, probably not.
No. What, I mean, like what's going through someone's mind when they think like, oh, you're going to appeal to universal values, but please don't be offensive in your appeal to universal values.
Well, I think it comes down to a misunderstanding of what humanist is. For one, and always equating humanists directly to atheists and anti-theism,
okay.
Which humanists generally aren't anti-theist. I mean, some of them can be, and it depends on the situation, but that's a whole different conversation.
Okay.
And I think she was worried that I was going to, you know, pull out some sort of weird anti-theist or Satanist mumbo jumbo and just offend the entire floor. Right?
I kind of like those Satanist invocations. Have you seen them, Meredith?
Oh, yeah. They're pretty cool to watch.
Oh, they are.
Very theatrical.
Oh, yeah.
You've got this epic verse that's, you know, being chanted and, you know, you got this incantation going on. And okay, so I can see that might be offensive to someone with Christian sensibilities. But does anyone ever think about how someone giving a very Christian invocation, in Jesus's name we pray,
no,
you know,
because they're all Christian.
Heavenly Father
right.
above, how that could be offensive to someone who does not grow up or does not subscribe to that particular worldview.
Right. I don't think they see that because of their own privilege.
Exactly. Because they still believe our nation was somehow founded on the Christian God when it obviously was
not. Don't get me started on that one.
Well, there's actually some interesting things back to Brevard County. That judge that said, hey, you know what? It's unconstitutional to deny them the ability to also give invocations, actually looked at 6 years worth of invocations at the Brevard County Commission meetings from 2010 to 2016 and found that all but seven of the invocations were given by Christians or contained explicitly Christian content, and six out of the seven non-Christian invocations were given by Jews, and that one remaining one was of generally monotheistic content. So I don't see much representation there in those particular things. You know, I mean, it's not good enough to throw in your six token Jews and one token general monotheist.
Right.
in hundreds of invocations over 6 years.
Yeah, that's certainly not representative of the general population, even in Florida.
Even in Florida, and you do have, you know, Central Florida Free Thought community that is, you know, very active in that and have been very active in giving lots of invocations and keeping track of different invocations that are given around the country and around the states. So congrats to Central Florida Free Thought for winning your case, winning your suit. This is Ask an Atheist. Give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC. We'll be back after the break with maybe some more lawsuits, maybe some more Satanism.
Okay, can you say Radio Tacoma?
Radio Tacoma.
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 Tacoma. K-T-A-H-L-P, 101.9 FM.
You are listening to KTAH-LP 101.9 FM, Radio Tacoma. If you'd like to help us out or learn more, go to radiotacoma.org. Specifically, if you're hearing this, we'd love to hear where you are and how you found this.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC is our voicemail line. Questions at askanatheist.tv is how you can email us. I promised that in the previous segment we would come back to Satanism and some lawsuits, and we got Satanism and lawsuit in just one whole story, and this comes to us from Topeka, Kansas. Meredith, Robert, you guys ready?
I'm excited.
Okay. I'm so ready.
So the American Humanist Association is bringing suit against the Kansas Department of Corrections on behalf of an inmate who alleges that all residents of the Topeka Correctional Facility are subjected to all-encompassing coercive exposure to Christianity. Sherry Weber Dunn identifies as a Thelemite, a follower of a non-Christian religion based on the mystical writings of its prophet, Aleister Crowley. Her suit contends that the profusion of Christianity results in a coercive atmosphere where inmates are pressured to spend their time in a high religious atmosphere and to participate in religious activities and prayers, thus violating the Establishment Clause. Had you guys heard of this thing, this stuff going on in prisons?
I had heard little bits and pieces of it before this. Prisons tend to be overtly Christian in the way that they run things.
So we've heard in a few little circumstances where you have a real struggle for people of non-Christian faiths to be able to, you know, gather or observe their religious practice. And that whole, you know, right to religion doesn't go away just because you're incarcerated.
Right.
There's a lot of things that do go away, a lot of things that are infringed when you are incarcerated. But that right to your religious practice, as long as it doesn't violate, you know, community safety, that doesn't go away.
Right. I've heard of several situations where Muslims had to fight for the right just to grow a beard.
Mm-hmm.
Or to have any sort of Islamic scripture.
Yeah, people from various faiths have been fighting to get their own types of religious scriptures into, or music, or writings. Like, it's just not allowed. These things are on contraband lists.
Right.
Well, just a few weeks ago, Meredith, you and I were talking about in Virginia that an issue of the American American Humanist Association magazine was barred from going into the correctional facilities.
Yeah, because it showed some breasts Eve in a famous historical painting.
Oh my goodness.
So American Humanist Association is pretty up on these lawsuits of letting people be able to have access to their you know, materials related to their beliefs and things like that. But let me just go through a few of these things that were reported from this particular correctional facility. And I'll note that it's the only all-female correctional facility in Kansas, so she doesn't really have a choice to be moved to a different place. She can't petition to be moved to a different facility, as if that would be a thing anyway. It's not like we have stratified prisons where this is the Christian prison and this is the non-Christian prison, right? This is for general, you know, population, not based. No, we don't incarcerate based on your religious preference.
Generally, no.
So, at least not for a long time in this country. So there's some when she says this profusion of Christianity, I was really shocked to the degree.
I was really shocked by this too.
Yeah, I think it's the worst one I've heard of.
So there is a community, you know, reintegration program where you learn skills. So the women will learn crocheting and then they will donate their items to charity. That's pretty cool. We think that's cool. Except Christian music is playing throughout the entire time that they're crocheting.
Ooh, what a buzzkill.
So there is a family visiting room. That's really nice because many women who are incarcerated also have, you know, family members or children that are reliant upon them and you know, or a way to continue that relationship. But there's an 8-foot wooden cross in that family visiting room.
That's a bit ominous.
All the time?
Yeah, all the time. They don't, you can't cover it up. It's not just for celebrating, you know, like coming for a Christmas mass with your family to celebrate and there's a cross there. It's just the family visiting room.
That's kind of similar to the crosses in all the Catholic hospital rooms.
It is. Yeah, it's imposing. It's there. It's always sitting there being like, I'm not in this space. I don't belong in this space. This is not for me. They're telling me that I don't belong. There are scripture and Bible tracts that are posted on the common room bulletin board with a punishment if any of the inmates remove them.
So I wonder if there's a punishment if you put something else on the bulletin board.
I don't know.
I don't know where these messages come from.
Oh.
So I don't know where the Bible tracts come from. I don't know where any of these messages, these scripture quotes come from.
Like if it's inmates themselves putting it up, if it's the like staff putting it up.
Based on some of the other stuff I've read, I'm willing to bet it's the staff.
I'm willing to bet so also because you have free Christian literature that's provided to the jail, and it includes church newsletters. I mean, I'm assuming these folks aren't leaving the jail to go to their church.
Why would they need a newsletter?
Yeah, that seems odd.
Church news next week.
Right. Church newsletters, daily devotional guides, Bible tracts, magazines, prayer cards, pamphlets. So if they're coming in via religious organizations, then someone's got to be putting them up on the bulletin board as well. But is there anything else that's being put up on the bulletin board?
That's a good question.
And lastly, there's Christian movies that are always being played in the common room.
That is probably like, can that be considered cruel and unusual punishment?
I was going to say that.
Or something.
All right, you got to get god-awful movies in there to help.
Right. God-awful movies?
Yeah.
Is that a...
Eli Bosnick.
Intent?
Yeah, that's another another podcast. That's another atheistic. They would definitely be along the lines of that anti-theist and atheistic.
Yes.
Unabashedly offensive kind of things. So being really immersed in this particular environment would make me, as a non-Christian who grew up Jewish and as a, you know, atheist humanist now, feel really, really out of place and feel that the government facility that I'm, you know, required to be in right now is enforcing this upon me. And I would definitely say that that's unconstitutional.
I would agree.
I agree as well.
So the interesting thing is that Ms. Weber Dunn is not a humanist, but the American Humanist Association is the one helping to file suit on her behalf. She actually is a Thelemite. So you have non-theistic, right? But so there's no overarching God, certainly not Christianity, but there's a lot of belief in the supernatural. In terms of
like some magic.
Right. It's where you'll see a lot of like mysticism and magic. And can you connect with people who have died? You know, a belief in the beyond, different powers that you can summon from different substances, things like that. Which to me, as an atheistic humanist, that's also invested in like a materialist philosophical perspective, like the material world is what we have, not meaning like I'm so shallow because I only care about my clothes materialist, right? But I'm concerned with what is in front of me. What is the tangible world in front of me? That seems very silly to me, right? That a Thelemite religion, that seems very silly. But it seems just as silly as a Christian religion in a lot of respects to me. And I don't want to bar anyone from practicing, you know, reading their own Bible, whether it's in, you know, their incarceration cell, or whether it's, you know, in their lunchroom at school, or whether it's in the privacy of their own home or within their church. I'm not going to bar them. I'm not going to bar the Thelemite from being able to, you know, not be burdened with all of this Christian propaganda.
Right. Yep. I think that's what the Humanist Association is really pushing for, is to make sure that everybody's rights are being respected here.
Yeah.
And I think it's the rights are being respected and the Constitution's being upheld.
Right.
And I'm really glad that the American Humanist Association has forged this pathway into our criminal justice system and correctional facility system, because we know that it's rife with unfairness in lots of domains. This is just one of them. And I think the American Humanist Association is really well equipped to look at it in this domain. And so I'm really glad for that.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to hear about another Satanist, another Thelemite elsewhere?
Sure.
So in Chicago, let's go from Topeka to Chicago. So we're still in the Midwest now. A U.S. district judge has ruled against Chicago area Satanist Kenneth Mayle, or Mayle. I'm not sure how he pronounces his name, but it's M-A-Y-L-E, in his contention that the In God We Trust motto printed on money has burdened his religious practice by forcing him to advance a message counter to his beliefs. Mayle is a non-theistic Satanist who follows Thelema and engages in, quote, sex magic. I'm not sure what sex magic is, but that is...
Isn't that a Red Hot Chili Peppers song?
That's the name of their first big album.
Oh, so I'm not sure. It was listed as things that he follows, something related to his religious observance or his credence. Judge Amy St. Eve ruled that Mayle is not, in fact, compelled to proselytize for an official government ideology that professes faith in one God, and cited numerous cases, including Willie V. Maynard and Newdow v. Lefauvre, in which the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco held that In God We Trust is merely a ceremonial phrase that has no theological impact.
Wait, you have what? No idea how much that angers me.
I have never heard that before.
Oh, yes.
And I am incensed right now.
So that In God We Trust, I'm going to turn it over to you, Robert, because you've been working on all these issues of mottos of In God We Trust versus E Pluribus Unum for a long time.
So the idea that a ceremonial deism is the one thing that really incenses me on this entire subject, because there's no way that saying In God We Trust is in any way ceremonial deism. You got to drop the deism first, because you can't trust in a God that's not really there. A deistic God doesn't interact, so there's nothing to trust.
Okay.
And it being ceremonial, hardly. If you've ever seen an argument for In God We Trust, it's almost always my God or Jesus or anything like that. Almost every single time it becomes personal God. So, and then we get into the we, right? Certainly not all we in America trust in a God. So therefore we've got a bigger issue there.
So what does it mean? What are they trying to say when it's merely ceremonial? I mean, wouldn't that be downgrading the validity of God for very religious people to say it's merely ceremonial?
And I've tried to make that argument before, but most of them just can't quite grasp that idea. Ceremonial deism would basically downgrade their God to someone who turns the dial and walks away.
Okay.
And then that's not what their religion is about.
So that's the deistic part of it.
Right.
That ceremony, are we talking just that invocation is saying it doesn't matter? It's like it's ceremony without meaning?
Exactly. It becomes, as the Ninth Circuit Court put it later on in the same decision, it becomes so rote that it is just standard practice.
Okay, so it loses all of its religious meaning.
It has no value.
It has no religious value because we just say it without thinking about it.
Right.
I think except to the people that it does have religious value to.
Right. And this argument that that I just go around in circles with, because you can't get anywhere with this argument. I've tried it. And whether you believe that it has value or not doesn't matter. To them, it has value.
Okay, so to highly religious individuals, In God We Trust has personal value because they're able to say that they're honoring their personal God that they very much believe.
Correct.
Is an active God, an intercessory God you can pray to, you can trust in him. I'm going to say him because that's
generally
the argument that I hear it from,
right?
From individuals who believe God that uses a male pronoun and or is interchangeable with Jesus.
Not Alanis Morissette. She's not God, unfortunately.
Nope.
Oh, well.
Have people said like, so God is the English word for a deity. Allah happens to be the Arabic word for a deity. Like, it's literally a translation of the word God. If you try to replace this with In Allah We Trust, meaning no understanding that God is just a word and Allah is the word in a different language, do you think that people would say it's ceremonially deistic at that point?
Absolutely not.
Well, it's not really by rote in our brains right. saying Allah we trust.
Exactly.
Does that mean that if you say something long enough, right? So if you say that pillar of Islam as a Muslim person, there is none other than Allah and Muhammad is his prophet. That's something that's said by rote. Would anyone argue that that's merely ceremonial and has lost all of its religious meaning?
I wouldn't know.
No.
I mean, that doesn't seem to have lost any of its religious meaning to devout Muslims.
And you could turn that right around on the Lord's Prayer.
Okay.
How many times do people say the Lord's Prayer?
Catholics, I imagine, say it at least weekly.
Yeah.
So having grown up Jewish, there's a lot of things that I can say in Hebrew, a lot of liturgy that I can recite in Hebrew by rote. And so the government's argument is that if you can say it by rote, it loses all of its religious meaning?
I think that's kind of what they were going for, but they were trying to do it in such a way that allowed this religious phrase to stay. They know it's a religious phrase, but they had to make it constitutionally legal. So that I think this wording was intentional.
So the wording in God we trust is intentional here.
Mm-hmm.
And our poor Satanist in Chicago, who regardless of what we think of his personal beliefs that are not atheistic, he doesn't subscribe to this God that's listed on the money as in God we trust. And he's just lost his lawsuit.
Right.
He's got another interesting lawsuit that's coming also that was also turned down. He actually announced that he was going to appeal this one on the money, and he was going to appeal his other one that said there were laws in Illinois prohibiting both adultery and fornication and bigamy and plural marriage. And that lawsuit got thrown out by saying, hey, these laws are never enforced against fornication and adultery. So he's appealing his lawsuit saying, well, bigamy, you know, plural marriage is still prohibited. So he's going to be appealing those too. So both the money case and the plural marriage case.
Interesting to see what happens with that. We'll probably have to follow up on it at some point.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that the reason that the Chicago Law Bulletin that initially, you know, was the source of this particular story, I've got a little hunch that that's why they included that part of his religious beliefs include, quote, sex magic as a way to sort of, you know, we can laugh at it. It sounds silly. It sounds weird. But as a way to sort of downgrade his, any possible legitimacy of the arguments that he has in his case that he's appealing a prohibition against plural marriage. Because if his religion advocates for that, if his religious beliefs advocate for that, then maybe he might have a case that his religious practice under Religious Freedom Restoration Act is being unfairly burdened. And I think that what's key here is you have this Religious Freedom Restoration Act that many, many highly devout Christians that happen to be anti-LGBT are utilizing to be able to say, you know, we don't have to sell cakes or arrange flowers for gay people getting married. You have groups that are turning this around that Christians and highly devout individuals never expected.
Well, the RFRA Act was never really intended for that purpose anyway.
Yeah, for Christians to be able to bar arranging flowers.
Right. I mean, it was so that Native Americans could practice using peyote.
Right. So have their substance that's important to their particular rituals and religious beliefs, and saying that there's no government interest in barring this particular religious practice.
Right.
It's not in public safety. It's not in government interest, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know whether Mr. Miley is going to be any more successful in either of his suits, since there's pretty good case law, unfortunately, from my perspective, and I think from your perspective as well, that it's never going to disappear from the money on this constitutional religious grounds.
Right.
Speaking of it, on the money. Speaking of In God We Trust, on the money. Are you guys ready for this one?
Yeah.
So October 1st actually marked the 60th anniversary of the U.S. national motto In God We Trust being printed on paper currency.
We call that Black Day.
So the phrase has been printed intermittently on U.S. coins since 1864, but it wasn't until 1957 that President Eisenhower approved the law declaring that the motto In God We Trust shall be printed on paper currency. So what could possibly have been going on in 1957 that, you know, maybe warranted the adoption of an official motto as opposed to the de facto motto beforehand that we used? And what could have possibly been going on in our cultural zeitgeist at the time that would motivate a president to put God on the money?
Well, it's kind of interesting time period. We got McCarthyism coming to an end in 1956 to 57, but communism was a big issue. The Red Scare was huge still, even though McCarthyism had settled down. And it was well known at the time that all communists are atheists, right? And all atheists must be communist.
Oh, so this is like a all squares are rectangles, but... Yeah. And then they went back and said, and all rectangles are clearly squares?
Exactly.
Ah, so they need to go back to their geometry logic classes then.
Right. So In God We Trust was brought up not too long after Under God was put into the pledge as a way to show the piety of the United States.
So that's really interesting. When we're talking about arguments for keeping In God We Trust as our, or for removing it as our motto, and it was created so we could feel more religious.
Exactly.
And then, but we have, you know, the people are saying now that it's not religious, it's just ceremonial.
Exactly. And that's what drives me insane about that argument of ceremonial deism. It obviously never was intended to be ceremonial deism.
It was specifically intended to show people how much of a godly nation we are, right?
Exactly.
So really, all that this is giving religious individuals ammunition for is, as long as you keep it on for a certain amount of long time, it merely becomes ceremonial at that point.
Right.
And we get to keep it forever.
Pretty much. That's the gist of it.
So when people say, okay, atheists, humanists, etc., why are you looking at these small little things, like getting the motto off the money, or, you know, okay, so there's one Bible quote on a school wall. Why are you going after that when there's so much injustice in the world? Humanists are supposed to believe in, you know, the integrity of our environment. Humanists are supposed to believe in, human rights. We should be trying to help the individuals who are in different countries who are being murdered for their atheistic beliefs. Why bother going after the little Bible quote on the school wall or the In God We Trust on the money?
So here's my take on it, and this is why I do it. Because every small infraction is justification for the bigger infraction.
Exactly. It sets precedent.
Yeah.
It's kind of a slippery slope or a snowball where you let one foot in the door and the whole person comes in behind it.
The hole in the screen that lets in one little bad idea. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. We'll be back after the break with maybe some more school talk, maybe some little feedback from some of our listeners. If you got some feedback, you can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist. Welcome, not welcome, I don't know. I don't know when they're putting me in the rotation. Yes, this is me, Ask an Atheist, with Sam Olley this time. At least this short segment with me. I am in town working on radio stations for stuff that kind of needed my presence. And so I thought I'd do a short interview.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I am good.
So you had knee surgery recently.
I did. Very glad to have it. Also very glad, wish I hadn't had it occasionally. You know, it's a bit of pain here and there.
Yeah.
But it's going to fix a 30-year problem, which was incredibly painful when it happened. So
just, a bit of a crescendo of pain and then the song of pain stops. Is that how that?
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay.
Yeah, and then intense physical therapy and lots of pain there.
Ah, physical therapy. The only bone I've ever managed to break is my pinky. And the physical therapy on that was enough to occasionally bring tears, but I can't imagine what it'd be like for a knee.
Well, this will be my second knee surgery. I had one about 20 years ago. Okay. It didn't work, obviously. Mm. So
same knee?
Yeah, same knee.
Okay. You ever throw your back out?
Yeah,
and you know, like before you, like, you know, it's going to happen,
yeah,
you know, it's, yeah. And that's, I'm on muscle relaxants for that right now. So if I seem a little gorked out, that might be why.
Yeah.
They call them muscle relaxants, but they really seem to be brain relaxants.
I think it's more nerve relaxer. Yeah. and since your brain is all nerves.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Because, man, I'm getting some good sleep, I suppose.
Well, that's a plus.
Yeah, it definitely is. But so we've been playing the ad for the original Motto Project for
about a year.
About a year.
Yeah.
And then the original Motto Project had the last summer. It was it last summer?
It was last summer.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the rally against Billy Graham.
Yeah. Or Franklin Graham.
Franklin Graham, yeah.
Yeah, Billy Graham's a clone.
Yeah.
And what's going on with the original Motto Project these days?
We've been pretty silent for the past 8 or 9 months. Mm-hmm. You know, my assistant director decided to go for his master's degree, and he was also one of our main writers.
Right.
So he's been kind of off and on with it, which is fine. I'm okay with that. But one of the things is there hasn't been that much action from either side, really.
Okay.
There hasn't been that much huge In God We Trust news. It's not like the sheriffs are back at it again, or there are not tons of cities going at it again.
Mm-hmm.
And we just haven't been as active. I've been busy,
right,
doing a lot of other things too. So Tom and I played around with the idea, and we're thinking, and we're probably going to go into a temporary hiatus.
Okay.
There's a lot of different issues that go along with that, and that kind of includes a lack of general support from the larger community.
Uh-huh.
We haven't seen a whole lot of groups, or even, you know, small groups coming to us saying, you know, here's our issue, you know, you guys seem to know what you're doing, how do we go against this?
Okay. So the In God We Trust Incorporated seems to have sort of slowed down a bit. Is she
is still doing it, but I think she hit a peak.
Uh-huh.
And it's just kind of one or two here and there.
Right.
You know, I think maybe in the past year, 10, 12 cities total in the past year.
Okay. That's definitely a downshift.
Right. And as far as sheriff departments, I haven't had a sheriff department in 6, 8 months.
Yeah, go In God We Trust.
Yeah, I think we had one that just got reported to me last week, somewhere in Pennsylvania. I'd have to look into it again.
Okay, all right. Have you heard about what happened recently in Clark County?
I don't remember. I probably should have.
They've had a complete change out in their board.
Right.
I think Milky has left politics, and everybody else has gone on to other things or just not in politics anymore.
Right.
And they recently just allowed, they changed up their, the sign is still there, of course, but they've changed up their rules on invocations now to specifically allow non-sectarian invocations.
Right, which is good.
Yeah. So one step forward, one step back, it feels like there.
Right.
Which is, I don't know.
Well, I did give an invocation there.
Oh, you did give an invocation there. When did that happen?
It was last year, March.
Okay, that's weird, because the rule said, I'd have to look this up, but it looked like there was some sort of ban on...
That may have happened after.
Okay, so then it's just, that's annoying. But it's a completely changed out board there. I think they've gone from 3 to 5. There were only 3 members.
Right, now it's 5.
Now it's 5.
Right.
I
seem to remember there was a kerfuffle about that while we were opposing God We Trust.
Yeah.
Because they were talking about they need to get this done before the 5 body comes in.
Yeah, because they figured probably correctly that the five person board that they were going to get wouldn't want to spend time on this.
Right.
It sounded like. Well, the other thing is to get a little, I guess, a little personal. You seemed a little verklempt a little bit on the state of what was going on with Original Motto Project.
Yeah, and I'm really torn on this because I don't want to shut it down. I don't want to go into hiatus.
Right.
With our latest initiative, and this goes to the Arkansas In God We Trust going on every school building, right?
Right.
We thought it'd be a great idea to create a poster that had both E Pluribus Unum and In God We Trust. Like, yeah, this is a great idea. People are going to get behind this.
Right.
We're talking about unity. We're talking about embracing this diverse concept of what we have. And that wasn't the response we got.
Yeah, I could see that. When I heard about it, I was of two minds. I thought, well, one, it's a kind of a cool hack. You know how much I like cool hacks.
Right.
The other thing is it feels like we're kind of giving in
right
a little bit.
And I certainly see that. I mean, yeah. I understand that point.
And so I withheld judgment because I what I decided was whether or not that would be effective for something like the Motto Project is entirely dependent on how it's done.
Right.
When we're just saying, oh, it's going to have In God We Trust on it, then, you know, some people are like, oh, it's going to be just these two phrases and that's it. And if it were just that, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know about that.
Right.
But the way you were talking about it is it sounded like it was going to be something a bit more informational.
Right. It was going to be historically accurate.
Right.
And we weren't going to highlight either motto. It was going to be, they were both going to be played the same mm-hmm. on the entire thing. So okay. We're talking about them as equally as we could.
Hmm. Yeah, geez. I don't know about that. I mean, again, two minds. I can see how that would be a real coup, a bit of a coup. But I could also see somebody, and it also gets the I don't want to give an ounce to the religious people
right.
here. Problem is our nation's motto.
Right.
Like, otherwise the original Motto Project wouldn't be called the original Motto Project.
Exactly.
It would be called something else.
Yeah, you're right. It's definitely a hack. And one of the things that I do is, like you, I tend to hack things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this as a way to get E Pluribus Unum in front of school children.
Right.
Right? To raise that understanding of what it was and what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I can do that is to use the law, say, here's a bunch of In God We Trust posters.
Sure.
They meet the law. They meet the requirement, and they're free to you. Go ahead and put them up.
Right.
And that was the whole idea.
Yeah. There is this thing among people who have, I don't even know how to describe this, but I'll give you a side example that I think is kind of in the same ballpark, and we can talk around it a little bit.
Okay.
Once upon a time, Sylvia Brown was alive.
Right.
And
right.
she was coming to Tacoma, to the Emerald Queen Casino. And I hit upon the idea of not as an official protest or as a protest of, something that, like, say, Seattle Atheists would do or Tacoma Atheists or Humanists of Washington. Like, it would not be an official thing, but that we all get seats in different parts of the theater and explain to the people around us what Sylvia Brown is doing while she's doing it.
Right.
And the idea there would be to plant seeds of doubt and criticism, you know, and skepticism in a place where there's very likely to be any.
Right.
But most people I spoke with about that would absolutely not go along with that because you would have to buy a ticket to Sylvia Brown, and no way am I giving that expletive any money.
Right.
And I thought that was sort of penny-wise and pound foolish a
right.
little bit
yeah.
From my perspective, because it was a little bit like, you know, after the place gets its cut, she's going to make, what, $30 off me? Where these people, any one of them, could call her up on the phone and then be charged $700 a minute
exactly.
for her private ministrations.
Right.
And I would give her $30 if it meant that she lost $1,200 later.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you there.
Yeah. And is this kind of in the same vein?
Yeah, it's kind of in the same vein. It's using their own tools against them, which I have, and that's one of the things that I love what the Satanists do.
Right.
And that was kind of where I got the idea for this. Like, okay, they're using their own rules to get their message across to tell them what they're doing isn't exactly right. This is just
right.
foolishness. So I thought, well, this might be kind of the same vein. We're using their law to promote our situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole idea behind it.
Yeah. And so the idea where you have In God We Trust on a sign, and like I thought about this, and I could even make a case that I'd have In God We Trust bigger than anything else on the poster, but as long as it contained an accurate history
right.
that highlights and makes it noticeable from far away that it's only been our motto since 1958.
Right.
To clearly put in the people's minds that you are not defending the founding fathers when you defend our motto.
Right.
Because it's not our motto.
Right.
It's only been our motto for the last 60 or so years.
Right.
So I think there's a value there. But then when you approach that idea to secular folks, there seems to be a lack of my problem here is that I can see their side of it, but mm-hmm. I think it's, and I certainly don't want to make it sound like I'm suggesting they are not intelligent, because that's not my goal.
Right.
But a lack of
I guess, tactical approach would be?
I think a lot of them are approaching this from a more emotional standpoint.
Okay.
That's how I kind of saw it, because there, I got some of the message were certainly felt fairly emotional and fairly emphatic about, no, we can't compromise at all with these people. We have to destroy them.
Right.
And I'm like, that's not what I'm here for. It's never what the original model project was about. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about destroying them. It's about replacing with what actually was.
It's, oh man, you know what this is a lot like? I'm very good at it and I will participate in them all the time. But debates are pointless.
Yeah.
Debates are worthless if you only consider the person you're debating against. And that's the mindset that I even fall into this, is that I treat these religious, anti-religious debates personally, and a lot of my friends do, like they're professional wrestling matches.
Right.
Like the whole point is that we defeat each other and then the defeated person loses something.
Right.
Nobody, I don't think anybody has lost anything of import in a debate since Lincoln Douglas. I think maybe that, and that's why we all look to that one.
Yeah.
And the whole point is the crowd, is the people who are there. Are you affecting the minds of the people who are watching this debate?
Right.
And I think we forget that sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. It's like, you know, a good example of that would be the Hitchens-Stephen Fry Intelligence Squared debate they did, where you had the crowd voting one way, where they clearly changed then the
They changed the point of view of the crowd.
They did.
I remember that one.
Yeah, and the question was very simple: is religion a force for good in the world?
Right.
And you had on one side you had Ann Whittacombe and an archbishop, and on the other side you had Stephen Fry and Hitchens.
Right.
And yeah, and they changed sort of the way people were framing it. And I think there's a there.
Mm-hmm.
So you said just recently that you're a little bit worried that you're not getting sort of support from your base. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So I spent a very long time developing a nice social media base, right?
Right.
And that's always been there, and that's probably always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things we were always lacking was support from the larger secular community.
Right.
So whenever I would go to one of the larger secular groups and say, hey, you know, I would like some assistance, can you promote this? Usually I was ignored.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to the bloggers, right? Big bloggers, you know.
Okay.
And they might throw in a little 2-paragraph thing, right?
Okay.
It was rare that we got any sort of real coverage.
Okay.
And that frustrated me so much, because I thought what we were doing was so important, but I wasn't getting any attention.
Okay.
And I think that may have been more frustrating than anything else.
The reason I ask about this is that there's a recent post on your blog that where you said that Original Motto Project wasn't an atheist group.
That is correct. It is not an atheist movement.
Okay.
But we are made primarily of atheists and secular people. But we try not to be an atheist movement. We want to be a secular movement for a secular government. And we try to put everything out in that way, right? We're not going to try and degrade religious people. In fact, we discourage that.
Right.
You know, that's part of the rules on a lot of our Facebook pages. You know, don't start calling people names. You know, you can't start calling them, you know, all these degrading things to religious people when they come on.
Right.
Have a reasonable debate with them. But, you know, if you start getting nasty, I'm going to kick you off too.
I'll be honest with you. That's one place where I kind of disagree with the approach, not because necessarily because it's a bad idea. I think on paper, it's a great idea. But when we look at organizations that don't take on a specifically or that sort of try to make it, I don't know how to describe it. People who try to straddle the border,
right,
is the way I would say it. You've got Citizens United for the Separation of Church and State. You've got, you know, in some ways, the Ethical Culture Society.
Right.
People who try to take both sides of the, or straddle the issue to get the middle, seem to be disliked by the edges on both sides.
Right.
And I think you might have fared a little better if you had just taken up the mantle of what already existed and accept the clear negative connotations that would be associated with it.
Oh, and we thought about that heavily, but then we started getting some support from some religious folks.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, I can't alienate this section as well, because it's not just about atheism, right? Anybody should be able to support separation church state, religious or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was our whole idea, is that we didn't want to alienate people that would support us.
Okay.
And we ended up alienating people that should have supported us.
Okay. Then I don't think I need to explain this to you. I think you already understand it. But
Oh yeah, I absolutely understand it. But I don't think I can change it now.
Well, no.
I don't think I want to change it now.
Yeah, I don't know how I would change it either. There's got to be a way. You know, for example, Foundation Beyond Belief. They occasionally do stuff with religiously centered organizations, as long as they're not working on something that's evangelical.
Right.
You know, sort of the challenge, the gap, I believe, is what they call it.
Right.
And I think there's a value to that, but it needs to be, because part of what we face with the atheism crowd is this is a part place where I'm not really well suited to it, is that I'm not a convert. I didn't leave a religion. I played with religion when I was a teenager, when I was trying to be rebellious, theoretically. You know, I played with religion a little bit, but it always felt like an ill-fitting coat to me.
Right.
This is, I didn't come here. I've always been here.
Right.
And so for people who have been in religious organizations and have been very poorly treated, you know, they've been abused, they've been tortured, and then they come to the atheism community, I could see why they wouldn't want to have truck with anybody, with any religious organization.
Right. I certainly understand that.
Yeah. And then how do I balance that with the fact that we live in this fairly decreasingly, but still fairly religious society, and that we actually have allies on the other side that we should work together with?
Right.
And this might be why I've kind of stopped doing a lot of organization work and have just stepped back and focused on what I'm good at, which is yammering into a microphone.
Right.
Because I've never really known how to tactically approach that. And more, I feel that, you know, we can get farther by working with religious people who work with us, who believe in separation of church and state, than we can by just working alone.
Right.
And the reason I think about this is because I remember that, you know, atheism is not my first, I've been an atheist most of my life, but atheism is not my first center of activism. For example, my center of activism for a long time was, you know, I was in the Gay Straight Student Alliance, the, you know, a bunch of other organizations where I was on the outside, given my sexual orientation, but I still believed that they should have rights. And I'd like to feel like I helped in some way there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never known how to bridge that gap.
Yeah. I think that's where I was trying to do, was to bridge a gap that is difficult to bridge. I think, Americans United has done that rather well.
I disagree a little bit because I don't hear a lot of atheists talking about Americans United.
Yeah. I guess it depends on what circles you're running in.
Yeah. Okay.
So I run almost exclusively in separation church state circles. Mm-hmm. So they're talked about a lot.
Okay.
I do get into the social issues, but a lot of times they also pertain to separation church state issues.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my mind, they're kind of tied together. Social justice issues and separation right. church state tend to run together.
I agree.
Because they were able to bring in a religious point of view
mm-hmm.
that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was hoping to do the same thing, or at least a similar thing, where I could work with the religious side and still be able to work with the atheist side.
Right.
And maybe I may have taken a step or two in the wrong direction. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just where I am right now.
Yeah. Well, that brings to sort of the emotional half of this argument, which I'm loath to bring up. But when I saw your writing, I did feel a certain sense of identity with it. I'm technically on hiatus now. This is like the least effective vacation I've ever had. But I'm theoretically on hiatus. I spend my time away from people and definitely away from activism. The only time I come down the mountain is when I have something specifically I have to do. A couple weeks ago, I had to build a radio station. This week, I had to work with a few radio stations.
Right.
And it was just stuff that I couldn't put off anymore. And when we were talking, you were saying stuff, you know, when we were talking about you being on the show this week, we right. were saying stuff, and it's like, wow, I strongly identify with this, but if we speak unvarnished on this,
yeah.
we're not going to make any friends if we do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is part of it you just need a break from the activism and need to regroup and rejuvenate?
I think that might be part of it. I think running this thing for so long without a whole lot of assistance, mm-hmm. it may have burned me out.
Yeah.
I've noticed that my activism level has gone down. Mm-hmm. I mean, I took a break from social media right after my knee surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, I was still paying attention, but, you know, I wasn't doing much.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped a bit. But after the release of the new initiative, I was like, wow, that really hit me.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that so many people were kind of against what I was pushing for.
Okay.
So the Arkansas, the poster.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when I got so much negative feedback from that, I think it really hurt.
Was it mostly, I mean, what kind of feedback are you talking about?
It was a lot of we can't compromise type feedback. I got hardly any positive feedback.
Okay.
So, which was surprising, because usually when we put out a new initiative, it's like, yeah, it's the best idea ever, right?
Mm.
And this one, I was like, whoa, that didn't feel good.
You wrote that press release regarding it. You were clearly writing it for the people of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was obvious. You weren't writing it for us. You were writing it for the atheism community. You were writing it for the people of Arkansas.
Right.
And that's kind of a problem in a way. Because everybody's going to read it.
Right.
And that's a dangerous line to walk,
right?
I think. And I think what happened is people, and I'm, again, just being brutally honest, I think people couldn't read between the lines and just assume that this was you giving up, which I think may have, or we're just going to.
Yeah, we thought that too. And we actually talked about this. Is this going to come up over as, you know, we're going to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty adamant that, you know, we're not giving up. We're taking a different tact.
Right.
We're taking a tact that we feel might be successful because other actions we've taken before have been rather unsuccessful. So we decided to try something new.
Yeah. And part of the thing that I was considering, this might be a gentle criticism, is I thought you guys make these posters, they meet the requirements of the posters that Arkansas requires for the public schools. They ignore you guys and they go after the church ones. That's a governmental preference thing.
Right.
And that could definitely go to court.
And we actually thought about that when we thought about the whole program. It's like, well, what if they reject us? Well, then obviously they're not concerned about actually promoting the motto. They're concerned about promoting religion.
But in your other writings on the original motto project, it seemed like you were specifically eschewing legal, like you didn't want to go legal.
We would prefer not to go legal.
Oh, that's a great preference. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But we wouldn't count it out, but that's a last chance.
Okay.
So, I mean, I appreciate all the other groups that can go legal and they can put out all the legal documents. I don't have those resources.
Yeah.
I have to use what I've got. And legal resources would be the last option.
I wouldn't want to count it out, but it sounded like you kind of were a little bit. I don't have my notes. I don't have notes in front of me.
Right.
But the idea of tackling this specifically in the social domain,
right,
or in the personal domain, and just informing people of the motto, because almost everyone we spoke with who was adamant about the motto were talking about it as if this were motto were handed down to us from our founding fathers.
Right.
Now, there's an aspect of deification of the founding fathers that I could spend probably a week talking about.
Oh yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that it's just not true on its face.
Right.
And so an educational approach, we're saying this is not our founding fathers' motto. Our founding fathers' motto was this. This is a Red Scare motto.
Right.
You know, this is a motto of enemies that you have, that of fear of enemies that are thoroughly defeated now.
Right.
You know, I think there's value there. But so it's like, I really like it when people go legal. I think the ACLU does a good job.
When it's necessary, absolutely.
But our track record on winning these things isn't very good.
And that's why I would use legal as a last resort.
Okay.
When I originally found the original motto, my intention was to change the minds of the people, not to change the minds of the government.
Right.
That's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew I'd never change the government. Not until I got the people behind it.
Yeah. It takes a long time for that kind of situation.
Yeah. I knew it was a very long game.
Yeah. But you can't just jump in at the last minute and win the whole thing. You have to play the whole game.
Right.
I don't want to insult people, but right, I feel like I must in a way, where people seem to think that history moves as fast as you read it in the books.
Right.
When social change happens a lot slower than that.
It does.
And it annoys the crap out of me because we're not doing so great on civil rights. We're certainly not treating people equally.
No.
And I'd love it if we could move faster than that.
Absolutely.
But, and it's painful. But That's why activism is so important. That's why I find all the social justice stuff to be so important, because you're not going to play the end game unless you play the mid game. And
Yeah, that's why I think I need a timeout. You know, either that or I need a pinch hitter.
Okay.
So,
Well, that's
kind of where I'm at right now.
Okay. Because the reason I want to do this interview is I've been reading what you guys have wrote, and I've read a little bit between, well, I guess you have wrote, because I used to think it was
Tom does most of the writing, right?
Okay.
But I go over everything he writes and is like, I agree with this. So
okay.
Generally we're in agreement on 99% of stuff.
Okay.
So.
But I was reading between the lines a little bit, and I was seeing a little bit of what I was feeling, and I was a little bit worried that you were gonna, I guess, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I was a little worried about that, because I really like what you guys are doing.
Right. And it's like I said earlier, I don't want to shut it down, which is why I'm taking a hiatus.
Right.
You know, originally we talked about just shutting down, period.
Yeah.
And after some conversations with you guys, I'm like, nah, okay, let's just take a break.
Okay. I think a break is good.
Yeah.
If things are at a minimum, then yeah, work on other stuff. And then when the organization is needed again, it can be brought out.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, it's the slow growth path, but I think that'll work.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's be honest. I've touched on this a little bit, but it does seem like we're now outside of a atheism as fad thing. And I don't want to call it atheism as fad, because it's like saying bell bottoms or like we were talking downstairs, shelves for shoulders,
right,
or whatever,
right,
where it was a fad that people picked up and now they actively eschew and actively hate. It's just something that they wore that had no meaning to them.
Right.
I'm not necessarily saying that atheism, people who are atheists in the last decade are not atheists now. What I'm saying is the activism part doesn't seem to be as important at it for a lot of people,
right,
so, as it used to be.
So I thought of a good analogy for that, and we came out with new atheism, right, in the 2000s. And I think people right now have moved past new atheism and into what I call comfortable atheism.
Okay.
So they're comfortable being an atheist, right? They're not being completely disregarded, right? They have a little voice here and there, and they're comfortable with that.
Right.
And I think that's where we're currently moving towards.
All right. That makes a certain amount of sense. I don't know what I would do with that, to be honest with you, because I don't feel like what have we accomplished? If we were to buy into the new atheism moniker, which I never have.
Right.
But it's hard to deny that after 9/11, which is outside of the lifetime of a lot of people who listen to this.
True.
Now, that there was a definite an interest, and our goal was, and I don't know what the goal was. I know what my goal was, which was social acceptance of atheism.
Right.
I don't think I've achieved it.
No, I don't think we have either.
Okay.
I think we've achieved social awareness of atheism.
All right.
Because prior to that, most people didn't even know an atheist.
Yeah, we weren't even on the map.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we've got that, and people see that as, okay, now we've got atheists on TV, we've got atheists in government here and there. People are like, okay, we're doing okay. Let's just chill.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I guess that's not me.
Yeah. It's certainly not me either. I don't think I can just, you know, sit back and chill and just hope something changes.
Right.
That's just not me.
Okay. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to see the original Motto Project disappear.
Right.
I understand what it takes to what it means to put something on hiatus so you can work on other things.
Right.
I mean, I've got we're looking on relaunching Humanists of Washington as a new type of organization, fairly certain. But that's been on mothballs for,
right,
2 years now.
Yeah.
And so I definitely understand. I need to not be here for a while. I need to retreat into myself,
right,
and gather some strength, and
right,
that's something I need to be sensitive to when I talk about the atheism as a fad, is that maybe it's not so much comfort, maybe it is that they've done what they can and that's their limit, and now they're off to, you know, they're doing something else,
right,
and that's not, that need not be a bad thing. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised in the next 10 years or so, there's a blip, because there's a lot of kids who grew up in that phase. And then the part where we were doing a lot of yelling.
Right.
And now it's going to be their turn, and they're going to see that not much has changed.
Yeah.
But they remember that era, and their identity remains the same, and their identity is challenged on a daily basis, and they're going to be just as tired of it as we were.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I feel like I feel like sticking with it is important. I don't know what my goal for this conversation was, I'll be honest with you. I was concerned. I was very concerned in what I reading, what I was seeing sort of behind the scenes, with no view to the behind the scenes, I should add.
Yeah.
You know, when I was reading what you were writing on the blog, and I'm like, oh no, because I think you serve an important purpose, especially nowadays when people are still talking about ceremonial deism.
Right.
You know, it's another thing that I think people don't get sometimes is sometimes there's a purpose in valiantly losing.
Yeah.
And it's like in this case, for example, Clark County, I thought was we lost ultimately. Yeah. But I thought it was a rhetorical and among the people sort of a victory for us.
Right.
In that we would ask questions like, why are they doing this and not running the county?
Yeah.
Or we would talk about the letter to the Danbury Baptists, and that, you know, we would ask questions like, if not secular, what sect?
Right.
Because, you know, if this isn't going to be a secular government, a government with no opinion on religion, that means the government is going to have to make a decision. What is it going to be? And is it going to support you?
Right.
That made some sense. And then the fact that people would talk about ceremonial deism and a bunch of Christians would stand up and say, this motto means that this God, you know, that this country follows that this one God, and this God is my God. Therefore, right. I count more than the people on the other side of the aisle.
Right.
And just building that up and building the social case that this is not, that this may have been ceremonial deism to people who, say, sit behind a bench and do a lot of research.
Right.
It is not ceremonial deism to not only us as atheists, but to a lot of Christians in this nation.
Exactly.
And I think we're going to have to take it on the chin in order to make this point.
Yeah,
and I think
so.
Some people forget that.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate losing.
Don't we all?
Yeah. But like here in Pierce County, overnight, we got 100 signatures of people in the county, of people said, don't do this. Do not do this.
Right. But in Pierce County, we can't count as a loss. More of a tie.
Yeah, Pierce County was a tie because we got both.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I accept, except that McCune is still elected.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
No.
Whereas, you know, okay, maybe we lost that battle in Clark County, but they're all gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that's a situation where I may have been in a screaming match with that Milky guy, but I think eventually he got the raw end of the deal because he's not in politics.
Yeah, he's not there anymore.
Yeah. And here I am, still doing my thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're not going to bow out.
Right.
I think the original motto project is important. And I tell you what, I see your bumper when I'm staying up on the mountain. I see your bumper sticker every day.
Yeah. Paul's got them all.
Yeah. And I'm glad to see it.
Yeah.
So I happily await the day when I can, again, talk actively about something the original motto project is doing.
Yeah, that day will come again. It's just, give me some time off, let me recuperate.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you got to leave time for personal stuff, man.
Exactly.
You do. Because if you don't, you end up, like, caving in and undergoing an emotional collapse.
Yeah.
And then hiding in a mountain for a month.
I was close to that.
All right. Well, it's good to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for talking.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I don't know when Becky's putting this in the rotation, so I don't know what's coming next. You're just going to have to wait and see for yourself. You are listening to KTAH LP 101.9 FM, Radio Tacoma. If you'd like to help us out or learn more, go to radiotacoma.org. Specifically, if you're hearing this, we'd love to hear where you are and how you found this.
Okay, can you say Radio Tacoma?
Radio Tacoma.
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 KTAH LP 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. I'm still here in the studio, me, Becky Friedman, with Meredith and Robert. And we've got some feedback from another Robert, Robert in Arizona, who writes, do you ever wonder if the term atheist is too broad to a group to ask a meaningful question to? Atheists, in my experience, tend to be extremely diverse in what they believe, support, and or know. This makes asking questions of atheists a difficult proposition, as the resulting answer will only be valid for the person who gave me the answer, and not the population as a whole. What do you guys think?
Yes.
That could be true of like any population.
I mean, that's a pretty simple answer.
Yeah.
Not all atheists are going to give the same answer to the same questions. I mean, we have an entire segment of atheism that is that kind of odds at each other about different issues. Always have, always will be.
So do we ever wonder if the term atheist is too broad to ask meaningful question to? No, because you've got meaningful questions that you can ask to broad groups of atheists.
Exactly.
That's so why we have more than one person on the show,
yeah,
and maybe different people sometimes.
So ask an atheist, not ask what the atheist holy book says on particular issues.
Do we have a holy book?
I'll have to consult that.
Yeah. Newsflash, no holy book. Newsflash, no Vatican. Newsflash, no Pope of atheism. Newsflash, no chief rabbi. Right?
Right.
Just means we don't believe in God.
Right. So, you know, I think here in this studio today, we've got atheists who primarily identify as humanists or perhaps primarily identify as atheists. You can be both. You're getting our opinions today on some things. So we encourage you to ask us by emailing questions at askanatheist.tv. You can also tweet us at askanatheistwa. You can find us on Facebook too. We're on facebook.com/askanatheistwa, I believe. And give us a voicemail. So Bobby, I don't know if that's a good answer, but we hope that you keep asking. So that's Bobby from Arizona. I did say that we were going to go back to school for a minute because this one incenses me and makes me, as a high school teacher in the United States, incredibly thankful, but also incredibly reflective. Three Tunisians have been arrested for the assault of a feminist school teacher who was suspected of being an atheist. Primary school teacher Faiza Souissi was prevented from arriving on the first day of school by angry protesters who allegedly beat her, stole her phone, and riled up parents of children. The crowd's accusations included rumors that the teacher was virulently anti-Muslim, being in the habit of shutting her classroom windows to prevent students from hearing Friday prayers that they said she compared to a donkey's hee-haw. Souissi's teaching day actually ends prior to the Friday call to prayer. She is admittedly outspoken about her opposition to girls and women wearing hijabs, but contends that she doesn't interfere with any student's right to wear one.
Well, I gotta say there is one bright point here. And yes, that's that the assaulters were arrested.
Yes.
So that is a plus.
There were actually six that were initially detained and then three that were kept and charged and arrested. So this is the Tunisian government saying, no, this is not cool. So yes, you're...
But the rest of it, no.
Yeah, that's awful.
So because you, you know, the children don't even know the teacher. It's the first day of school. It's before the first day of school. Children don't know the teacher. Parents don't know the teacher. It is alleged that these rumors were started against this particular female teacher by hardliner Muslims, by very religious and very devout Muslims. So you have a woman that's saying, I don't wear a hijab. I advocate against women having to cover their hair with this piece of cloth. And I lament when I see young girls having to wear this because it's, you know, if in your particular faith, the hijab is supposed to cover women to keep them modest, why would someone as young as 6 years old need to have modesty? It must be because you're sexualizing a six-year-old. And anyone who speaks out against that, if you're a female teacher of high profile in Tunisia, you risk being beat up by an angry mob?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm almost speechless that we would still have these issues with people. That we would still use religious doctrine in such a way. Well, I guess not, considering religious doctrine. You know, it tells us to do this stuff.
Right. Yeah. So we do have these really interesting things that are going on in different areas of the world. And one important thing that really I value, in spite of, you know, stories of a young woman being, you know, given an F for speaking out against Bibles, in spite of, people in our incarceration systems being subjected to Christian propaganda, I am glad that at least in the United States, we are better in many respects than other countries. But this brings us to a story from the United Nations. And it's a little bit layered and it's a little bit complex. The United Nations ambassador, the United States ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, was one of 13 individuals who voted no on a UN resolution that condemned the death penalty as a sanction for specific forms of conduct such as apostasy, blasphemy, adultery, and consensual same-sex relations. 27 nations voted in favor and 7 abstained on the issue. The Obama administration abstained from a similar resolution in 2014, but it lacked reference to the use of death penalty for LGBT individuals.
Now, in general, I can't say I would be surprised if someone like Nikki Haley would vote against something like this, just because of her history with the community.
So this is both the LGBT community and people in other nations who have, you know, who risk the death penalty, who risk, you know, ultimate punishment for merely having a different thought, a different belief, a different religion, or leaving, trying to leave, apostasy, yes, trying to leave their religion at birth. So you guys curious about who voted no on this?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. So we're in company with Botswana and Burundi and Bangladesh. We're in company with China, Ethiopia, Egypt, and India, Iraq, Japan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. That's who we're in the company of.
It's pretty much a who's who of human rights violations.
Except for Japan.
Yeah, so Japan's a little weird.
Japan and the U.S. still maintain the use of the death penalty for certain circumstances. And this actually brings us to some clarifications by the State Department. So as if it wasn't clear enough that we said, no, we don't want to condemn death penalty for use against apostates and queer people in different countries. That seemed clear, but we needed some clarification. So State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert responded to outrage from the LGBT activists and allies in the wake of the failure to vote in favor of the UN resolution condemning death penalty for acts of homosexuality. Nauert stated that the U.S. voted against the resolution because of broader concerns with the resolution's approach in condemning the death penalty in all circumstances.
Yep.
She maintained that the country unequivocally condemns the application of the death penalty for conduct such as homosexuality, blasphemy, adultery, and apostasy. And Ambassador Nikki Haley tweeted that the country has, quote, always fought for justice for the LGBT community. Seems to be in conflict with her past history and record, or just our country in general.
Or, sorry, Nikki, you know, are you most, trying to just gaslight us?
Yeah, most of the administration now. I mean, just ask Jeff Sessions how he feels about it.
Yeah, or Mike Pence, if, you know, staunch, always fighting for justice for the LGBT community. Yeah. Wasn't it Mike Pence that had his house, his personal residence protested with, like, a gay rave dance party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he had to rewrite a bill to make it more palatable in Indiana.
Yeah, so this is the thing that really kills me about it, is I heard about this and I thought, oh, the administration doesn't care about the LGBTQ A+ community. They don't care about us. And I wasn't really so shocked at that, because they have a proven track record
of not caring.
Not caring.
Yeah. Or of anti-caring.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
outward hostility.
The opposite, yeah.
But I got even more mad that this whole thing seems to be about us wanting to preserve the death penalty so we can kill people in our own country.
And it seems that Japan is also in that same boat.
Right.
Yeah. And that really... I'm anti-death penalty, so that's it makes me even more mad.
So you've got Japan and the U.S. who still want to be able to have death penalty on their books for crimes in general, maybe crimes that we do believe, that we as a country apparently do believe are worthy of the punishment of death. And so we're unwilling to condemn death penalty for being gay. Or in, let's face it, in many countries, merely being suspected of being gay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or apostasy. Or let's face it, merely being suspected of leaving your religion.
Or even just blasphemy.
Blasphemy, which we know we've covered, right? Mm-hmm. That can mean anything, because the practice of one particular religion can always be blasphemous to the practice of another religion.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. If you determine blasphemy as anything that could incite offense to religious believers, well, you're being governed then. All of your behaviors are being governed by the most strict, stringent, extreme views of what they could possibly be offended by in terms of violating religious scripture or edicts.
Right.
So we're not willing to do that. We're not willing to say at a UN vote. I mean, you could have abstained. You could have abstained, Ms. Haley, Ambassador Haley. You could have abstained, like, I would say cowardly-ish, right, in 2014, because it was about, no, we don't want to vote no or yes in terms of the death penalty. But specifically saying no, specifically giving a no vote, is telling people that, no, we are okay with countries that institute the death penalty for people who dare to have a thought that differs from the religion of their birth, or for people who act on their human need to for love and companionship. And to vote no on that is disgusting to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I am not pro-death penalty in pretty much any way. But you're right. This is actually far worse than just a general approval of the death penalty. Because you're approving, they have essentially approved the death penalty for people who have no choice.
And to say, yeah, we unequivocally condemn the application of death penalty in that way. If you unequivocally condemn it, then abstain from voting on that particular thing because you unequivocally oppose one component of it.
Right.
But you can't be fully on board with eradicating the death penalty completely. So abstain from the damn vote.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've actually got the International Humanist and Ethical Union that has said something about this, and in a very interesting way, very interesting kind of way.
How so?
In a groundbreaking occurrence at the UN Human Rights Council, the International Humanist and Ethical Union, or IHEU, and numerous faith groups have called on nations to highlight the right to freedom of religion and belief when reviewing each other's human rights records. Research shows that only 2.5% of recommendations related to peer-reviewed human rights records concern the right to freedom of thought, religion, or belief. The joint statement was issued by seemingly strange bedfellows that include the Alliance Defending Freedom, the Baha'i International Community, Christian Solidarity Worldwide, European Humanist Federation, the International Association for Religious Freedom, and the International Fellowship of Reconciliation.
Yeah, I generally don't see the Alliance Defending Freedom in the same sentence with International Humanist Ethical Union,
yeah,
unless they're opposing something.
Right.
Yeah, that's a shocking
weird
one.
That really jumped out at me.
Yeah.
But what then really jumps out at me, why? Because Alliance Defending Freedom typically is the, you know, okay, this law legal group that says, hey, you're persecuting Christians in America for not allowing us to be able to discriminate, you know, against people that we don't like, right?
Right.
The bottom line here, which really reinforces this issue of, hey, we need, when looking at human rights, we need to look at freedom of thought, freedom of belief, freedom of religion, that really underlies that point, because you have this Alliance Defending Freedom, which, like you said, Robert, is almost always at odds,
yeah,
right, with what we describe as humanistic or, you know, freedom of religion, freedom from religious encumbrance,
right,
in the U.S., mixing with humanistic belief and thought, which almost always is a non-theistic, you know, execution of your philosophy. It's coming to fruition, this ethical and humanistic way of being without supernatural, without belief in God. And for people that are seemingly so polarized to be able to say we need to look at freedom of thought and freedom of religion when looking and examining human rights, I think is momentous.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. But I got to look at the underlying reasoning for the ADF, right? I wonder, because I got to take like the devil's advocate on this. Are they doing it just to protect Christian sensibilities abroad? Is that their main goal, is to make sure that Muslim countries aren't prosecuting and persecuting Christians?
I would be okay with that, because, you know, if that's their particular goal in making sure that Christians in Muslim countries are not persecuted, because I'm not a Christian. I don't believe that Christians should be able to persecute people, but I certainly don't believe that you should be persecuted, beaten, you know, mobbed against, jailed for being Christian.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between actual persecution in other countries and the alleged persecution that they probably think that Christians are going through in the United,
right,
States, when they have to bake cakes for gay people.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, we see that actually this accusation of blasphemy is used against Christian individuals in Pakistan as a way to resolve disputes amongst neighbors. All you got to do is say, hey, my Christian neighbor who I don't like because, I don't know, their fence fell down on my side of the property, you know, I accuse them of blasphemy, and suddenly my problem is dealt with, because that person is either, you know, detained and put on trial for blasphemy, which has the death penalty as a possible outcome for blaspheming in Pakistan, or extrajudicially, you can have just the neighborhood come and burn down their house.
Right.
And so when you have those kinds of things, like, that's a real thing. And if the Alliance for Defending Freedom wants to work on that, okay, maybe it'll distract them from some of the baloney kind of lawsuits that they're trumping up here in the United States, because, you know, God forbid that you have to make some flower arrangements or bake some cakes.
I know.
So, speaking of baking cakes, we're going to go to the Trump administration for one little itty bitty thing. And that is that the U.S. Department of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, she's actually going to be in Bellevue this week. This is of particular interest for me for two reasons. One, because I'm a public school teacher involved in my public school union, and Betsy DeVos's antics, I'll say, her leanings, really has done a lot to undermine public school and public school unions and public school teachers. She's a proponent of what is nicely deemed school choice, but it's you know, pulling kids out of one place and pulling that funding to support needy students and putting it in towards, you know, other private institutions. She's a proponent of vouchers, of doing that through a voucher system.
Yeah.
She's a proponent of, you know, she has personally sponsored individual children, and mentored them, and then paid for their education in private schools, which is great for one individual. And sometimes you feel the need to, like, attack a problem one kid at a time. But now she's Secretary of State, right? Secretary of Education, pardon.
How is she going to afford to send every single child in the United States to a private school?
Oh, she's not going to afford that. She just really wishes that all the schools in the United States would turn over to private schools.
Yeah.
Which, of course, don't have any legal requirement to educate children regardless of ability, don't have any requirement to take students from particular religious backgrounds or ethnic backgrounds, things like that. So she's going to be at Bellevue. She's going to be in Bellevue. She's at their annual dinner for the Washington Policy Center. What really gets me here is the Washington Policy Center wrote up a thing saying, why are we hosting Betsy DeVos? Oh, amongst their things was, we want to give young women a role model so they can see themselves participating at the highest levels of government. Did the Washington Policy Center ever invite Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? Because that's pretty high level of government
that is,
that young girls can see, you know, in terms of a role model, regardless of whether you are in favor of Hillary Clinton or voted for Hillary Clinton or liked her as Secretary of State or like her now. To use Betsy DeVos as your exemplar for what little girls should aspire to because we want to be able to see everyone in government, and then to completely ignore, we had Janet Napolitano, who was head of Homeland Security.
Right.
She was governor of an entire state.
We had Susan Rice.
Yeah. So you have plenty of women in some of the highest levels of government.
Right.
And this is the one that you choose. No. You're not fooling us. You're not fooling anyone here. So the other reason that I am going to show up on Friday with a lot of teachers from teachers unions, and I encourage humanists and people that are pro separation of church and state. The reason I encourage you to show up is because of this religious view that Betsy DeVos has in terms of privileging religious institutions in educational environments.
Yeah, that's been my issue with vouchers from the get-go. In general, I'm sort of okay with the voucher system if it's used properly. But once we start giving government money over to religious institutions to do religious education, I start having a huge issue with that.
Well, we already have, in terms of public schools, if you have a child who is in a particular district whose needs cannot be served in that district, and whose needs are constitutionally and by case law protected, that district will pay for that child to be educated in the most appropriate environment. And one example of that is Bridget, who's been on our show a lot. She used to work in deaf education, and her district fielded students from many, many districts all around because they didn't have a robust deaf ed program. And so you would have kids from neighboring school districts that would send their children to the district that she worked in. But that's completely different from using money to then support religious instruction, because
right,
that's from one public school to another public school. So here's what my sign is going to say. here's what, it's not going to be about DeVos, you know, and education. It's not going to be about any of her moneyed background, any Amway references, any, you know, private security form.
No low blows from you.
No. All mine is going to do is to quote the Washington State Constitution. And the Washington State Constitution, Article 9, Section 4, is titled Sectarian Control or Influence Prohibited. And it reads, all schools maintained or supported wholly or in part by the public funds shall be forever free from sectarian control and influence. So that's what I've got in terms of my DeVos protest, because you cannot institute your vouchers for private school and be in accordance with our state constitution. And boy, am I glad that our state constitution is more robust than some of our federal case law, some of those things. So show up to protest DeVos on Friday up in Bellevue. You'll see me, maybe you'll see some other folks, and you'll be supporting education. Robert, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
And Meredith, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing our writing, Meredith, with us. Our producer is me, and you can find Robert at Secular Yakking. Music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. We'll see you guys next week.